The magic of radio has taken us behind the scenes at a meeting of the Sons of the Desert, the Laurel and Hardy fan club, and our guests are the exhausted ruler and the grand sheik of the bacon grabber's tent. Charles Huck is the exhausted ruler, and Tony DiGaudio is the grand sheik. Welcome, fellas, to Those Were the Days.
Well, it's nice that you could show up at one of our meetings, Chuck.
We're glad to be here, and we're going to talk about the Sons of the Desert and your bacon grabber's tent. Chuck, where did the bacon grabber's tent, how did it get its name?
Well, bacon grabber's gets its name from the 1929 Laurel and Hardy two-reeler by that name. And we get the names of these tents by from the movies that Laurel and Hardy made over the years. And the main tent, of course, is Sons of the Desert. So. Mm-hmm.
That, of course, is from the...
That's the national tent. Uh-huh. And all the tents around the country take other names of movies for the names of their tents. So we, after I checked around, I found out that Bacon Grabbers was free, so we took that one.
Well, what are some of the names of the other tents across the country?
There's a Blockhead's tent in Daytona Beach, Florida, and... there's a way out west tent in
California,
Los Angeles, yeah. And there's a new one called the Pardon Us tent out in Massachusetts, and it is composed of a group of prisoners.
Oh, I'm surprised that wouldn't be the Blockhead's tent, huh?
No.
Or, what was it? Wasn't that the movie?
Pardon Us.
Oh, the Pardon Us is the feature with the prisoners.
Who's Gal, which was a two-reeler, right?
The Pardon Us tent was formed. This was brought out at the annual banquet, which was held last June, and was rather humorous the way it was presented. A fellow named Hal Stanton, who has a TV show out in Massachusetts there, I can't remember the town, he got up and spoke before the group and explained how this got started and so forth, and he actually got a letter from these prisoners, and they said, "We'd like to form a Laurel and Hardy tent in the prison." And he said, "That's tremendous." So he went out, and he bought a projector and films, and they set this thing up, and they meet once a month. And one of the stories he tells, just briefly, he got his projector set up, and the bulb burned out. So one of the prisoners said, "Well, the warden is not here tonight, but he has a bulb in his office. If we could get that, but his office door is locked." So they had a contest of who could open the door. So nobody would say anything. So he had to go out and get a new projector. But anyhow, that's
And he was a bulb snatcher, too, at the same time.
Yeah.
Tony, what about the... how did this whole thing come about? Can you tell us what prompted the formation of a Laurel and Hardy fan club? Was it formed before Stan and Ollie passed away?
Yes, it was. It was formed after Ollie had passed away, but before Stan had passed away. And John McCabe, the author of the book "Mr. Laurel, Mr. Hardy" by Grosset and Dunlap, if you're familiar with it,
that's standard reading for every member of the
The Bible.
The Desert,
Bible,
right? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And he's done a lot of research, and I guess he's followed Stan and Ollie around for years, trying to just gather enough information for his own, I guess he's kind of a teacher
he's an instructor up in Michigan.
Yes, in Michigan, in fine arts, you know, and so forth. And he came up with the idea, and he drew up the original charter, and he had Stan approve it, you know, which, of course, Stan did. And, of course, after he passed away, the thing... blossomed. I guess it really got its big start in New York, where people like Orson Bean and Jackie Gleason and some of our other members there, Al Kilgore.
These people are all members of the Sons of the Desert?
They're all charter members, right.
When did,
tents, yeah.
When did Stan Laurel pass away? When did he die?
He died August 7th, 1965.
And he was what, about 70?
70 years old, yeah.
And Ollie?
And Ollie died in 1957. What was that date, Chuck? Remember? I think it was in February.
February.
Yeah. 57, yeah. Anyway.
February 1957.
How old was he? He was 65 years old. Uh-huh. Yeah.
How long did the boys, how long was their association in films? It dates way back, doesn't it, to the early 20s?
About 1926 is when they started making their first film. You'll get some debate as to when they actually, what their first film was as a Laurel and Hardy team.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of films were made, say, in 1926, but not released until 1927. Mm-hmm. And you'd had some made in 1927 that weren't released until 28 and so forth. So there's a little bit of confusion there. And even William K. Everson, who authored the book, The Films of Laurel and Hardy.
Yeah.
Even he has been taken to task, and he is one of the so-called film historians. And some people will argue with him. So I'm not going to get in trouble and say that this was definitely the first film that Laurel and Hardy made.
Well, from what we hear, that the Putting Pants on Philip was actually the first, as a team, that Laurel and Hardy, as a team, made. This was the first film, although it was not the first film released. It was released after a couple of other films had been made, next.
Would it be likely that a member of the Bacon Grabber's Tent of the Sons of the Desert fan club would get to see Putting Pants on Philip, that Laurel and Hardy picture? Is it available? Is it around?
Yes, I have it, as a matter of fact.
You have it. You both are avid film collectors, right? And you have a large library of Laurel and Hardy films, as well as other movies, too.
I have a collection of about 65 of their films myself, and I know Chuck has quite a few.
I've got about 20.
Mm-hmm. And you just, when you get together like once a month for your meetings,
you take a great stack of films.
I remember I was at one of the meetings here about a month or so ago, and it was an interesting short that you had. I can't remember the name, Chuck. You would remember it better. The one showing Oliver Hardy in a picture by himself, where he may have had some of the aspects of the character that he developed.
That was called The Paper Hanger's Helper with Bobby Ray, 1925, I believe. Uh-huh. That was a two-reeler. Yes, that was one of the Laurel and Hardy, it was one of the early comedies with Babe Hardy alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. These were all Hal Roach films. Yeah. Right. They both worked for Hal Roach for a number of years before the... were put together as a team, you see. In fact, their getting together as a team was an accident. That they had been featured in, they had both been featured in the same pictures, but not as a team,
Mm-hmm.
And gradually they come closer and closer together, where finally they decided that, that Hal Roach decided that maybe it would be a good idea if they would be, billed as a team, and they would, go on that way, and which they did, and of course, very successfully,
Yeah, they were really the greatest. They were
1927, 28 were very good years for them. They made quite a few pictures, and when sound came in, they made the transition beautifully because their voices fit in perfectly with their character.
That's right, Stanley.
Go ahead.
One of the interesting things, if you went back and saw their films from the early days when, say, Stan Laurel went into films, and when Babe Hardy went into films, you sat down and you ran through, say, some Stan Laurel films in the early 20s, 22, 23, and then you started off in about 28, 29, 30, and you watched some Laurel and Hardy films, you would hardly recognize Stan Laurel. His comedy routine was entirely different.
Mm-hmm.
I picked up some Stan Laurel films, for example, and ran these off, and I didn't find them funny at all. To watch Laurel and Hardy work as a team, this is the ultimate. To me, it's the ultimate in comedy.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. You fellas are both obviously great fans of Stan Laurel and Oliver Hardy.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think we're more than fans. I think
buffs, I think.
We're
buffs.
Well, yes.
A buff, actually, is a perfectionist, mm-hmm. where a fan is just a person that likes certain films.
Well, there are millions of fans, and how many buffs are there? How many? How many? How many sons of the desert are there?
What's our name?
Across the country? How many?
It's really hard to say. I know that some tents around the country have members coming and going.
Uh-huh.
Should we say that these are not truly buffs? Maybe they are. Maybe some, they were buffs and they lost interest or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that the Way Out West tent in Los Angeles has about 100 members.
Mm-hmm.
We have about
20
mm-hmm. members, something like that. 22 yeah. maybe.
Now these are dedicated yeah. religious members who religious. Are with you every religious. Month, every
yeah.
month,
oh, yeah.
right?
Sure. Sure.
They keep showing up.
Now of course the 20 members are wives, so we try to encourage husband and wife.
Generally, your membership is made up of people of virtually all ages, generally adults, I would guess, and really look forward to, I guess you meet about the fourth Saturday of the month?
We have been meeting about the last Saturday of the month, but when you get close to the holidays, for example, with Thanksgiving coming up in November, that's a different story. You have to boost up the date a little bit.
Well, you... I know, because I've been at a couple of these meetings, and it's great fun to sit back and watch Laurel and Hardy movies without a commercial in them. And
well, we're glad you could make it, and I'm glad you're enjoying it.
Yeah, we're happy to be a part of the Laurel and Hardy routine here. Speaking of commercials, we're going to take a break for one, and then we'll listen to a little slice of Laurel and Hardy, and then we'll be back with our guest Charles Huck, the Exhausted Ruler, and Tony DiGaudio, the Grand Sheik.
Oh, my exhausted...
Bacon Gratter's Tent of the Son of the Desert.
Thank you.
We're back with our guest Charles Huck, the Exhausted Ruler, and Tony DiGaudio, the Grand Sheik of the Bacon Grabber's Tent of the Sons of the Desert Laurel and Hardy Fan Club. Chuck and Tony, I know you guys are super fans, buffs, if you will, of Laurel and Hardy, but... are you blind to any of their faults? Do these fellows do no wrong for you, or do they have any faults? Or have they made bad films together? Are you willing to admit that Laurel and Hardy made a bad film or
Definitely,
two or three?
Sure,
or,
they made.
What's your outlook on Laurel and Hardy?
In the 40s, and the last film, which was made in 1952, Atoll K.
Atoll K.
Was terrible, horrendous. They were old and they were sick.
Yeah.
They were working for someone other than Hal Roach.
Mm-hmm.
They were terrible. They worked for 20th Century. They couldn't do what they wanted to do. Hal Roach gave them pretty much a free rein. Mm-hmm. This was after a little bit of bickering, but not too much. So they made their best films at the Hal Roach Studios. And later, when they went to 20th Century and what else did they work for?
MGM.
Yeah. Right.
MGM released
And MGM, films, they were under the direction of people who wanted things done their way, and Stan and Ollie wanted to do something, why this was kind of shoved aside, look, you'll do it my way.
Mm-hmm.
It's business, after all. Yeah. But at the Roach Studios, they made their best films.
What would you fellas say? Tony, what would you say was their best film?
Well, I think people will differ on this, and of course, as far as their feature films go, I think people will agree that Way Out West was probably one of their...
Way Out West.
Yeah, that was one of their best features, and of course, they did win an Academy Award for a two-reeler, which is a short subject, and that was the Music Box.
Is that the one with the long stairway up where they're pushing the piano all the way up to the
1932.
Top?
1932.
Yeah, that's a three-reeler.
Who was in that?
Billy Gilbert was in that.
Yeah.
Billy Gilbert, right. He did a very nice job there.
He was the antagonist.
Yeah. yeah. There was a woman in that, too, wasn't there?
Yes, but
a minor role, I guess.
I don't recall. She was a nurse.
Yeah. Oh, that's right, yeah.
Taking care of the little baby coming down the stairs.
Yeah.
She was the one who was always laughing at, or she was the one who laughed at Stanley because he dropped the piano or something, and then he kicked her you-know-where, and then she went to get the cop, and he came back and so forth. Very, very
just,
funny.
You know, thing. Just talk about it. Just think about it a little bit, and you can enjoy it. And
sure.
Great to see that picture, too.
Yeah, right.
So,
but what I was going to say was that at the Hal Roach Studio, Stan did all the editing and directing and some of the comedy writing with H.M. Walker. And Hal kind of sat back and just let these two fellas operate, you know, and come up with whatever they could or whatever they did, and of course the results of it showed that it was good. And naturally when they got into the more modern times, when they got into big studios like MGM, things were done a little differently, you know, and the scripts had to be written and followed to the letter, you know, where they would, I think Stan mentioned a couple of times that he would come up with an idea as they were shooting the scenes, he'd come up with the comedy lines, you know, and they would do very little rehearsing. They'd get a basic story, line, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they would go from there. They would just start shooting, and they would, as things went on, ideas came up, and they interjected them, you know, into the subject there. And
it made for some great comedy.
Great
comedy, which has stood the test of time.
Mm-hmm. In these later days, when Laurel and Hardy went with MGM and Fox, Stan was kind of frustrated because he just couldn't do what he wanted to do, and I think this this really hurt the films that they made in the
You can
days.
Tell. As you watch these things, you
sure.
can tell.
Yeah.
Stan admitted himself that those films were, in fact, the last one he said was deplorable. He says, it should have never been shown, you know, and Atoll K I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But you see, Stan would, in them days, they would shoot everything in chronological order. In other words, if they had to go from... they had to go from the front room into the kitchen, they would take the whole crew into the kitchen,
mm-hmm.
you know? And if they had to come back into the front room and go back out into the kitchen again, they would follow through. Where in today's doings, filmmaking, you shoot all your scenes in the kitchen at once and all your scenes outside at another time, you know, and the actors themselves have no idea what the storyline is unless they've written unless they've read the thing beforehand, you know.
Well, Stan and Ollie developed many of their own stories right on the spot.
That's right.
They weren't exactly like the old Senate days, I guess, when they'd be doing something in the studio and they hear a fire engine race by, you know, and they'd grab the equipment and run out and put a doll into a woman's hand and say, go in there and come running out like you're saving the baby from the fire or something like that.
Sure, sure.
Now, as Laurel and Hardy super fans and buffs, you fellas are also interested in everything that has to do with Laurel and Hardy. You're interested in all of the players from their movies, for example, and you have quite a bit of information up there in your brains and in documentation too.
Two minds without a single
thought. Right. On people like Edgar Kennedy and Billy Gilbert and Mae Bush. And who would you say was the greatest foil for Laurel and Hardy? Was it Edgar Kennedy?
No, I would.
Well, Edgar
it
Kennedy.
It might differ, but I would say Charlie Hall.
Charlie Hall. James Finlayson, you know.
Finlayson.
In many of their sound, in most of the sound pictures, it was either Charlie Hall or. James Finlayson. But in the silent pictures, it was mostly
Edgar Kennedy.
Now, who was known as the slow burn? Was that Edgar Kennedy?
No, that was Jim
Finlayson. Now, what was Kennedy's? He was just a blustering type of character most of the time, wasn't he?
He sort of did a slow burn, too. although, when you speak of who was the one who does the slow burn, it's usually... it's usually Finlayson. He also was great for the double take.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, he knocked himself out one time. He hit his head on a wall. He did such a double take, he collapsed.
Yeah, on the film.
Hurt himself.
Big Business, where the pair is selling Christmas trees in the summertime in California. They're going from door to door. The picture originally was supposed to be made where they were going to go from door to door and, you know, selling Christmas trees. And, of course, as the picture turned out, they went to the second door, to the second house, Finlayson's house, and there was enough laughs there for the entire two reels, you know. And Finlayson did a double take there where he would, you know, squint one eye and raise his eyebrow and pull his head back, you know. This one time he hit it against the wall and he knocked himself cold, you know.
Big Business, by the way, with the holidays coming up, I suppose.
Yeah.
The Big Business was considered one of their all-time classics. Made in 1929, I think.
Well, that had the flavor. Now, I remember another one called, I can't think of the name offhand, but it's where they're in a row of cars all piled up. And they're pulling, they systematically destruct the whole situation.
That is also considered one of their.
Yeah. Now, which came first, Two Tires or Big Business?
Two Tires was a silent film, and there was some debate on that, on which would be the greater of their films, and of course, at the time that the Academy Award was given for the Music Box, that there's still arguments today as which is the best film, you know. But Two Tires is definitely a terrific film, you know.
Does it matter to you fellas which is their best film? I mean, you say this person, they differ, or someone else would say it would be this?
I think when you start out in something like this, in a hobby like this, you try to pick up the films that you like best, uh-huh. or that maybe someone else has told you mm-hmm. are pretty good pictures. But eventually, I think you, the goal is to get them all.
Get them all. Right. How many Laurel and Hardy films are there?
About 99.
99, I suppose. And not all of those 99 that Everson lists in his book were actually the Laurel and Hardy team. Some of those were before the team, mm-hmm. you know. But it's where they came close together,
yeah, uh-huh.
close to being a team, you know. Yeah. And all things like Do Detectives Think and The Double Whoopee, and these there's some debate as to whether those were really mm-hmm. Laurel and Hardy featured as Laurel and Hardy pictures.
Do all of the members of the Bacon Grabbers tent and any of these other tents, are they all film collectors of Laurel and Hardy films?
No, a few of us are, I think, in our group of about, say, 20, how many would you say have films?
Well, three or four,
three,
I think.
Four or something like that.
Standard equipment, though, they have some film, Laurel and Hardy film collector as a tent member, so you've got some films to see, right?
Well, so far,
we take things along. I take my projectors and films to many meetings, you know, and mm-hmm. it isn't absolutely necessary, you know. What we try to do, now we have a vice sheik by the name of Jim Sof, and he's doing a lot of research.
He's in charge of vice.
Yeah, he's doing a lot of research in things that nobody has answered over the years, you know, as like the Cuckoo Song, where did it mm-hmm. come from? Where can we get some of these recordings that the Boston Symphony made and the Columbia Symphony made and of these things? And what was the actual recording of that and who mm-hmm. made it, you know?
And these are unanswered questions.
That's
yet,
right,
huh?
yeah. And you have some of the background music in their films we're trying to also define, you know.
A little incidental background
that's
music
right.
that we're
right.
playing.
Yeah.
All
which
the
was
time.
Tremendous music,
yeah.
actually.
Sure.
Yeah. Did I was asking about if you have to be a film collector to be a member. No, you don't. So you
no.
have to be just a an interested
Very,
party,
very
right?
interested, seriously interested.
Uh-huh.
But.
See, we're afraid I don't know if we want to get like California or not with their tent over there, because we have a group now where we're small enough where we can meet in each other's homes,
uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. each other's homes every month or so. But if we get too big, then we have to get into a hall, and it may create problems, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyone
find
who...
a meeting place and.
If someone is interested in serious membership in the Sons of the Desert. And the Bacon Grabbers tent, they should get in touch with one of you fellas, right?
Oh, right.
They can get a hold of me, and I'll see that they get your names
right,
and
right.
my addresses. And
sure.
You're always interested in another serious Laurel and Hardy authority, right?
Sure.
Or
certainly.
Non-authority,
sure.
someone who'd like to become an authority.
Certainly. We're always. You don't have to be a film collector to join. Just the only thing we ask is to have a very serious interest in this. For example, there are a lot of things that I come up with as a passing interest, and a week later I forget about it.
Uh-huh.
But, and we have run into some members who come in and spend a few hours with us at our monthly meetings, but then you never see them again.
Mm-hmm.
Although they express the desire to become real, true blue members at the time, it's rather short-lived,
mm-hmm.
which is unfortunate, but...
Well, you find out, though, whether or not people
certainly.
Really do have
certainly.
The interest, you know.
Certainly.
And you're happy to welcome anyone
certainly.
Who has
interest
in Laurel and
definitely.
Hardy.
Sure.
Well, we're glad to welcome you to our program today, fellas. Charles Huck, the Exhausted Ruler, and Tony DiGaudio, the Grand Sheik of the Bacon Grabber's Tent of the Sons of the Desert.
I may mention before there might be some confusion. I'm the Exhausted Ruler of the Bacon Grabber's Tent. The Exhausted Ruler of the Sons of the Desert is Jack McCabe.
Jack McCabe, the author of the
right.
book,
who started
Laurel.
The whole ball right, rolling, right.
right.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, Laurel and Hardy are our subject today on Those Were the Days, and we know Laurel and Hardy are in your hearts all the time and at your meetings, too. Thanks, fellas, for being with us today.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure being here.